Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now into the second year of the Trump administration, and the last year has been filled with ups and downs, important victories, successful holding campaigns, and painful defeats. We've learned a lot, but there's always more to learn and more to be done. In this now weekly series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
Hi, I want to start with Medicare for All. Tell us about what's happening. We followed the Senate bill launch, but what's going on in the House?
Basically, I just switched in for John Conyers.
Right.
But what we're going to do as we're starting a Medicare for All task force, a single-payer task force, and Pramila Jayapal and I are going to help lead that effort.
Right.
Debbie Dingell's there. Ro Khanna's there. Barbara Lee's there. We got a team. We're going to really push. We believe that in this moment, the most important thing to do is to help build the public support and the public awareness and the public knowledge. So that's our goal. We got a plan to move out on all fronts and have our members do a tour, to have meetings in their districts on single payer. So this is what we're doing. We're working with Bernie. But we believe that this is the issue, and that time for this issue has come. Now, we're all staunch advocates of the Affordable Care Act, but we're looking further. We imagine an America where, when you get sick, you worry about getting well, not whether you might be in bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing.
Related to that, we're in election year. We've got people who are running on single payer. All of y'all are obviously up for re-election this year.
Yep.
But so
we got people winning primaries on single payer. We got people out there.
Yeah. So there's energy within and without the Democratic Party pushing in this kind of a direction. Does it feel like there's a momentum shift, and when did that start?
It started when people like Paul Wellstone were raising it, and people were like, well, what's that? What is single payer? We don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And all we're doing is building up the momentum. No doubt Bernie's run for president caught a wind and definitely escalated the awareness.
Yeah.
But where it's really driving this thing is the fact that you get sick, man, and can't afford your medicine. I got a young lady who I work with every day, smart as a whip, super talented, but she has toxoplasmosis, so she needs Daraprim. So that little creep, Scarelli, says, okay, $13 a dose is now $800 a dose, not to mention EpiPens and a whole bunch of insulin, something like insulin. It's like skyrocketing, all so that they can, you know, commercialize it. And people have come to the conclusion, like, wait a minute, does it have to be this way? Is it this way in Canada? Is it this way in a whole bunch of other countries? Turns out, no. And people want a better alternative. And this is wrapped up with this market power issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so that's what starts. I mean, every time a Martin Shkreli screws somebody, we're winning converts to single-payer universal, single-payer health care, Medicare for all.
Yeah.
And so what we've got to do is be able to get out there and say there's an alternative. It doesn't have to be this way. And so our mission now, particularly when the Republicans are so dominant, we're not going to pass it. Our mission needs to be get out there and get out there strong. Let people know what's going on and let people know there's an alternative, and they don't have to suffer this way. They don't have to mortgage the house so that they can get an operation, you know?
So we're talking about market power. We're talking about all this stuff. What are some other sort of, I mean, you made a joke about maximum wage, but like, what are some other big...
I didn't make a joke about, no, wait a minute. I did not make a joke about maximum wage.
You were serious.
I made
about
a statement about maximum wage.
All right.
What I'm saying is, if you were to say, look, if you make more than 20 times more than people who actually make the products and do the services of your company, then we're going to tax you more. We're going to tax you at all. Right, we're going to tax
you. Well, that would be a good start.
right.
That would be a good start.
Right. We're going to, you know, so that we're going to, you're going to be ineligible for certain programs.
Yeah.
We're just going to set up the rules to say that, or we could even do something like, say, look, if you want to pay yourself more than 20 times your average worker, that's fine. But if you give the workers an increase as you get them, then maybe we'll think about that in terms of some sort of a policy benefit. But this idea that you can leave people in poverty as you are stacking up dead presidents like nobody's business, it's got to come to an end. I mean, the CEO of McDonald's makes $9,000 an hour, and there's fighting people getting $15 an hour. And
but they turn their logo upside down to be a W, so they care.
They care. They totally care. But my point is,
yeah,
these people, and not only are they just screwing over workers, they're screwing over the environment. They're like clear-cutting forests so that they can graze more cattle. And we all know that, like, beef production is extremely abusive on the environment.
Yeah.
And so they're like bad actors, you know? And so, you know, this. So when I wasn't joking about having a max. I mean, you know, why shouldn't there be a maximum wage? You know, like, I remember when Ford, GM, and the Chrysler came for $25 billion to rescue the American auto industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, well, okay, how much does a guy who runs Toyota make? Oh, he makes a few million dollars a year. How much you make? $28 million a year. I said, whoa, wait, stop. I'm going to tell you what your problem is right there. You know, your interests and the work interests of the company are not aligned. To you, the company is just something you, it's like paper, just like toilet tissue. You wipe yourself with it and throw it away when you don't need it. I mean, that's basically what it is. And the workers and everybody's that.
Yeah.
You know, and like, where did you get that damn greedy? And how did you create a philosophy that says that to protect your greed? So that if I say you shouldn't be that greedy, you get to call me a name. Right? Because they do. They call us names.
Oh, yeah.
Because we say your incalculable greed is not acceptable.
Yeah.
That's fine. We get to be called communists when we say that about them.
Yeah.
The truth is, they get to, why don't we call them what they are, which is avaricious and greedy.
Yeah.
And not tolerated.
Yeah.
I mean, you can open up your company, you can even make a profit, but why do you have to make more than 21 times your average worker? Why is that a thing? Isn't 20? Okay, the CEO of McDonald's. You telling me they can't make it on, I don't know, if the workers are making $15 an hour.
If the workers are making $15
You notice
an
I said
hour.
If. You notice right. I said if. Why can't the CEO make $300 an hour? That's still a lot.
Still a lot of money.
You know what I mean? I mean, but they make $9,000 an hour. If you told them you only can make $1,000, they'd be like, oh, no. It's ridiculous. And this is the world we live in. And, you know, but the one of the panelists was right. He's, you know, we don't really even know who these people are.
Yeah.
We don't know who they are. We don't encounter them.
That's why we know who Martin Shkreli is, right?
Right.
He becomes the face of it.
But we don't even encounter these people. You know, your average working class person busted out on 725, they know lawyers.
Yeah.
Their son had one. They know, might even know a doctor, like, you know, because they go see the guy. But they don't know who owns McDonald's. Because the guy who owns McDonald's, he don't fly commercial. So there's no way that they were working in the airport and they saw the guy.
Yeah.
They don't go, unless you work at Mar-a-Lago, you don't see these people, right?
Yeah.
And so that we've got to figure out a way to make them famous in a bad way.
Yeah. One of the most compelling moments I've ever seen was being at the Walmart shareholders meeting and watching the workers confront the CEO.
Right, right.
And then the chairman of the board ran.
Like, he don't...
Folks were talking earlier about people being afraid to talk about racism in this country under Trump. And so I wonder if you have some thoughts and advice on how to talk about that without sort of saying, like, Hillary Clinton's unfortunate, like... Half of these people are deplorables, but like to actually say, like, how do we talk about this in a real way?
See, so most of us talk about racism from a very from a very capitalistic standpoint.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is racism is what working class white people do to working class black people. What if you looked at racism another way? Racism is what the big bosses use to manipulate everybody against each other. That's another way of looking at it. Same kind of thing. I mean, what does it profit a working class white person in the antebellum South to be for slavery? That's keeping you in poverty. But you say, you're white. We'll let you, you don't, you know, we'll let you walk around in poverty. But they got to stay here. And you just, I mean, it's like he's at the classic pitting of the have-nots against the have-very-littles. And this is the way they do it. So my view is that, you know, we've got to engage in real conversation with each other, and we've got to use, and we've got to ask who benefits from all this racism, who loses, all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, look, because Florida purged black voters in the year 2000. The whole country got George Bush, which led us into a war with absolutely no justification, and the whole country got a prescription drug benefit that enriched Big Pharma. This happened to everyone of every color. Racism helps elites control everybody else. Therefore, our fight has to be solidarity, but we've got to do a lot of public education to help everybody understand what's happening here. Why is it that the states we associate with the most intense racism are the southern old Confederate states and also are the poorest states? But don't make no mistake, they got rich people in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, very rich. But the reason they're able to maintain that wealth is because everybody at the bottom is at each other's throat. Now, I'm not saying there's not racism in the upper Midwest, but the states furthest away from Confederacy have the least amount of inequality. Now, it's still relative. There's plenty of racism in Minnesota. I know that. I'm from there. And in Maine. And I'm not trying to say these people are off the hook. What I'm saying is, you show me a section of the country that has the most inequality, I'll show you the most racism. Right? And that's just kind of how it works. But we've got to look at it that way. But like, we all see the world from our own angle, right? We see the world from our own angle. We've got to do a lot of public education. We've got to help people understand that these puppets have strings, man, and that we're being manipulated, you know. But we've got to find the right language and to do it. And I think it's well within our power. And the success of the progressive movement depends upon it. We've got to learn how to talk to working class white people about racism and not get them so damn defensive that they don't even want to have a conversation. And we've also got to learn how to, those are just a few thoughts. I mean, but here's the other thing, and I'm sorry for going on. If you notice in the popular media, who is the racist? It's always the poor, ignorant white person. Always that guy. Well, wait a minute. In 2018, March, what is it, 8th today, the chief racist in America is Donald Trump, a billionaire, who comes out of the chute talking about Mexicans are rapists, Muslims are all terrorists, black people are all bad, tweeting stuff about it, black people commit crime. Why is that? My theory is, if you do not actively promote racism, it doesn't work as well. And you have to promote it. You have to make these people suspect each other, because if you don't, it won't take. It doesn't self-perpetuate on its own. It is promoted. So anyway, I don't know. I'm sure people don't agree with me on that, but I think those things are true.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.